Hi everyone, so I'm just waiting for everybody to rejoin. Yeah. Hi everybody, welcome.
Hello.
Yay. Thank you so much for coming back. So I actually just also want to talk about some interesting themes that I think you cover in the book, you know. So there's a commentary on just reproductive rights and like autonomy to self that you make in the book. You know, Adumi has a realization about not wanting to have children. We don't want to give away too much of the book. But she has a realization and she then takes active steps, you know. And I thought that it was interesting that you wanted to include that in the book. So I guess really the question is, why did you want to include that particular dynamic in the book?
It's interesting that you put it that way, because it was really a case of I'd finished the book. And I was like, wait, hang on, Abby. You've written the whole book. There's a young girl there who is, you know, is sleeping with this man. How did she not get pregnant? Like, it was really just a case of me reflecting on that doesn't make sense. That does not make sense. So me adding that there. But then it also made me realize that, hang on, I'm actually giving Adjani a little bit of power over her situation. And it's not the ideal kind of power, because the best thing is for her not to be in that situation. But at least she could control that aspect of her life. And so that's how that came. It wasn't anything genius on my part, trust me.
So Adumi looks at education as, you know, her only way out. And I want to know what do you make of that in her context, you know? So Adumi doesn't think of running away or whatever, right? She has a singular goal and it's focused on getting an education, you know? So I'm curious about that view of education as this like only way out for Adumi. Why did you approach education the way that you did?
I think that it was from that conversation I read, the part in the book. So my mother really instilled in me the importance of getting my education right. It is the foundation of everything. It's the foundation of deciding what you want to do with your life. It doesn't necessarily mean a way out of poverty, but it helps you to be confident. It helps you to be able to make key decisions. It helps you to be able to stand up. Right? To stand up and use your voice. And the only way Adini could have done that was to have at least the basic education. And remember that this is somebody that one lives in a society where I've come from, where connections are very important. So even if you're education, you still need to be connected. You need to know somebody. You need a leg up in many, many parts, you know, many times more than anything else. And so the least she could do is to have an education so that she can help herself take the other necessary steps that are important. And then her mother told her this, just like my mother did, that, you know, your education is what will give you a voice. Girl child, something has been denied and deprived from the girl child for many years across the world. And so it was my way of saying that we can't continue to do this. You know, I should be giving this a basic right of every child. And so that, I think that's why I had to show that it's absolutely critical that every child, not just the girl child, is educated.
So Adumi wants to have a louding voice. And Nkosazana and I were talking, we were thinking about what it means to have a louding voice in the context of a patriarchal society. What does it mean to have a louding voice in the face of people who refuse to hear you? So I think of Adumi saying to her father that she didn't want to get married. She did well at school. Her mother had high hopes for her and still, she had this voice and her father just didn't hear her, you know? So I want to think about what does it mean to have a louding voice in the context in which girls like Adumi find themselves. So girls who may not necessarily be well-educated, who may not necessarily speak in ways that are articulate or who may be able to command certain spaces. What does it mean to have a louding voice in that kind of context?
So I think in that context, and I'll give you an example. My best is to give you an example. I read a story of a young girl, a 10-year-old called Nujude, who was forced into marriage. She lives in, I forget now, somewhere in, I think it's the I'm not sure, sort of Middle East. I'm not sure what country in the Middle East. I escaped my memory now. Now, she was forced into an arranged marriage. Now, this girl was not educated. She did not go to school. But she knew that it was wrong for her to be married to a man that was at least 6 times older than she was. And so what did this girl do? One day she left home, went to the courts in the city of her village and demanded a divorce in her own language. And she said, look, I just want to be separated. And that day there was an uproar. She was, you know, all sorts happened. And what happened in the end was that a woman took interest in her lawyer. She was granted a divorce and the law in her environment changed to allow young girls to be able to divorce. Having a louding voice means taking action in the way you can. And action is not defined by language. It's not just how you speak. It's just your way of showing that I would not stand for this, right? In my own case, my louding voice was through writing this book. It was my way of saying, I know this is happening. Can it stop happening? Some people, their louding voice is through singing. Some is through blogging. Some is through Instagram live videos, talking about issues that matter. And so it's not down to how educated you are. It's really down to you standing up for what you think is the right thing to do. That's really what the louding voice is. But in Adini's situation, it was about her getting an education because she came from a place where young girls were not educated. And it's not just about her. It's about having a legacy, allowing the girls that are coming behind her to be giving that right to be educated. So louding voice is whatever it is to you, to be able to stand up for what you think is right, for the right thing.
Something I thought of when I was thinking about the louding voice was how Adam Lee thinks that Big Madam and Miss Tia have louding voices, right? So she thinks that just by virtue of the position that they find themselves in, they have louding voices. But Big Madam, in many ways, is unable to just express herself. She's unable to even make certain decisions about her household. And Mrs. Tia herself, Tia also, in some ways, finds her voice stifled. And I thought that it was an interesting contrast to have these two women that Adamie thinks has louding voices or thinks are examples of louding voices who themselves struggle to find their voice.
Absolutely. And that's why I said to you that it's not really about your education. It's about your ability to be able to stand up for what you think is right. And I think that those women, in their own way, were not able to, for whatever reasons, but Adini was. And so it's interesting to look at it that way. But yeah.
There's an interesting scene, and I guess there's also a theme of religion that you... that you cover in the book as well, you know. So there's an interesting scene in the church with Tia, and when people read the book, they'll find out. Firstly, I think that you made an interesting commentary on the way that, for example, infertility is thought of in the context of these women, right? So infertility is primarily thought to be the woman's responsibility. It's thought to be the woman's problem. And so Tia experiences all of these very problematic things, and the church is used as a backdrop for some of the problematic things that Tia experiences. And so I'm curious about why you use the church as a backdrop, but also why you wrote the theme of infertility in the way that you did, particularly in Tia's relationship.
We're taking a short break.
Are you a Caribbean American? Are you looking for a podcast that truly speaks to your culture and identity? Look no further than Carry On Friends, the ultimate destination for all things Caribbean American, hosted by me, Carrie Ann. Dive deep into topics such as culture, heritage, and everyday life through the unique lens of the Caribbean American experience. You'll walk away feeling more connected to your roots. Follow and listen on Apple Podcasts so you'll never miss an episode of Carry On Friends, the Caribbean American experience. Your Caribbean American community awaits.
I think that when I was writing that, when I started to write the book, I wanted to have each of the characters in their own way have something they're battling with, have conflict, right? It's just the basics of writing fiction. But I wanted the conflict to be something that reflects some of the things I saw growing up and some of the things I ponder about and question. And one of the things that has always I found quite disturbing and fascinating is that every time there is a problem with infertility, well, not every time, many times when there's a problem with infertility, it's the woman's problem. And we come from a society that many of us, it's quite religious, right? We go to church, we go to mosques, and we go to traditional rulers. It's just the way the society is. And majority of, some of this situations are dealt with in those ways. So it's always going to be in many, many families, it's going to be, yeah, go to see the doctor, but you need to back it up with something spiritual. It's just the way we are. And so I thought it's quite common in many, many books written by Nigerians. There's always that layer of spirituality that is put in there, either through the traditional way or through going to church. And so for Tia's case, I just wanted to show some of the things that I saw of how the church handles. Not all churches. So when I say the church, I mean some churches that I saw, how they handled this situation. But also what happened to Tia was deliberate in the sense that I wanted to give her something that would make her think that she'd felt some of Adonis' pain. It made her think. It doesn't mean she has. And so it was going through that experience without giving spoilers. It's going through that experience enabled. That was the first time she actually thought, wow, I know what it feels like to be inflicted physically with pain. She never had been. And so that was why I put that in there. Every single action that happened in the book was to drive the story forward. And so that was quite deliberate to allow Tia, because I couldn't think of anything else. She married a reasonably, he was quite deceptive, but he was reasonably sensible. And I didn't want to just have him be violent to her because I wanted to prove a point. So I thought, why not use her, the issue she's going through, and have that show one, an aspect of our society, which is interesting to me, and two, to show her own way of feeling pain. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Stay with me. I was just looking at a comment there, but stay with me. Yeah.
I found Big Madam to be a character who, she just aroused so many emotions in me. I was annoyed. I actually not even annoyed. I think I was very angered with the way in which she treated Adami, how she treated Rebecca. But also, I felt sorry for her. She's a complex character, She is somebody who... I found the scene where she, you describe the skin lightning to be interesting, because you think of Big Madam as this established woman who really, in many ways, is seen to just be the pinnacle of having arrived and having made it. But you also then go on to describe her as somebody who lightens her skin, who is just fundamentally unhappy with herself. And I thought that the use of the skin lightener was just such an interesting dimension to add to Big Madam, So I'm curious about the theme of colorism, why you wrote the theme of colorism in the way that you did in this context.
Like you said, I wanted to show Big Madam's insecurities, right? And I thought quite hard about doing that, because colorism is something that I've found quite interesting growing up, and seeing how people that are perceived to be lighter skinned are treated better, or perceived to be treated better versus people that were darker skinned, and how Big Madam felt that her husband would not appreciate her and treat her well unless she was a certain skin color. Mm-hmm. And to show, and then obviously she then goes to lighten her skin to the point of damaging it, mm-hmm. and her husband still doesn't change. Mm-hmm. And so it was my own way of just trying to understand this woman and her insecurities, and to show the depth of that insecurity whereby she would damage herself. And that obviously comes from, we could go into all colonialism and, go deeper, but I didn't want to go that deep. So I just wanted to show that on the surface level, her interior struggles with how she sees herself. And how she's completely out of control of her on her marriage. She's completely lost control, doesn't know what else to do, has done everything she can and still doesn't have the attention of her husband. Well, meanwhile, what she needs is to attend to herself, and she refused to see that. So we're just showing that.
We've spoken a lot about, I guess, the difficult relationships between the woman in the book, but there's also some really beautiful relationships in the book, you know? So I see there's a comment about Adonis' mother, who then had died in the book, you know, unfortunately, but whose legacy almost protects Adomi, you know. So there's a relationship that she's built with somebody that she cared for, another woman that she cared for in her time of need, which later on comes to protect Adomi, right? And I thought that there was a commentary there about the ways in which women's relationships have not only protected them, but have also protected their children. So the ways in which the kinship that we build among each other as women also goes far beyond just our own relationships with each other. I think that was such a beautiful scene, and I really want to know what was going through your mind when you decided to write the scene of protection that woman offers Adomi so many years later on.
I think it was to show that as women, we need to empower each other. That's one of the things, to show that. So the theme of motherhood runs quite strongly in the book. Obviously, my mother, I dedicated the book to her. She's a huge influence in my life. And I remember writing the book and thinking that the only reason why I'm speaking to you like this, that you can understand me, is because my mother sacrificed a whole lot for me. And as I was writing the book, I kept on thinking, there's no way Adonis could, you know, if she had my mother and her mother had, you know, her mother had lived, she wouldn't have gone through what she did. So the first thing I had to do was take her mother out. But even though her mother was not there physically, Adonis carried her in her heart. But it wasn't just Adonis' mother. There was also Khadija, who was like a mother figure to Adonis. And then later on, then there was Iya, who helped her. So I was just trying to show that, look, you don't physically have to birth a child to be a mother figure to that child. So in the other relationships, apart from her natural mother who wasn't there, you know, there was Khadija who offered that love and that support, and then there was Iya and all that. So I just wanted to show the importance of mentorship and empowerment of us as women to be able to reach out to each other and help each other out, and how those little differences can make a huge difference in a life. Mm. So I think that's what I was trying to do in a way.
Oh, Khadija. We'll talk about Khadija. Zizo says, why did Rebecca hide the letter in that particular place? Yeah, I think that's a really good question.
I think I explained it in the book. She was on her way somewhere and she put it in there. I mean, it's one of those things where there's loose ends where, you know, you can interpret it how you want to interpret it. But I think I wrote that there only because she was on her way. Big Madam was, if we believe Big Madam's story, right? If we believe Big Madam's story, Big Madam was taking her to see the doctor, and Rebecca hid that letter there because she wanted somebody to see it. It's really that simple. She had been writing and she wanted someone to see it, if we believe Big Madam's story. But if we don't, we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't believe Big Madam, but that's just because Big Madam's behavior in the book and what she was saying in relation to Rebecca's story, it just didn't add up. I couldn't believe that Big Madam would be that person. But I guess it also speaks to the negotiations that people have to make to survive. So if Adomi hadn't given her the letter, what would that have then looked like for her, you know? So I don't believe Big Madam, but that's a whole different story. Khadija, can we talk about Khadija? Why did Khadija... Oh, Khadija. Mm. I'm curious about the character of Khadija. Did you find it difficult to write Khadija without giving away too much of what happens later on to Khadija? Was that one of the more difficult parts of the book to write?
It was. It was quite difficult to write. And I think I got quite emotional in that part when I was writing it. But I thought it was important to show, to talk about a few things in that book, in that scene, or the few scenes where she appeared. One was the importance of the male child and how the male child is seen as precious over the female child. Mm. And that's one theme across the whole book. So the male child is something that many, many women would do anything for. Right? And as a mother that has two girls, you can understand why I wonder, because my girls are smart, beautiful, brilliant, and I don't think I've ever for once wished anyone of them was a boy, or that they, or that it would have been better if I had boys. And so just seeing where a male child is seen as more important, it's just something that baffles me. And so I wanted to show that. But I also wanted to show the lack of education and how when a woman is not educated, she takes certain decisions, right? So a simple visit to a midwife might have solved some of the problems that Khadija went through. And she didn't, because she genuinely believed in not, you know, not going to do these things, because she, you know, that male child was quite important. So I think that's part of why I layer those in there. But I also wanted to show the friendship between both of them, and the fact that women do not, we don't always have to pitch against each other. And in their case, you know, they could have, you know, they were rivals. They married the same man, but instantly they met, they became friends. And Khadija was like, look, this is about our survival now. And sometimes women, we need to do that. It's about you and I getting out of here alive and making it. It's not about anybody else but us. So it's just a few things to think about.
This is something you've spoken at. I think you covered so well in the book. This loss of childhood that girl children often have, you know, so there's often a discussion that girls are just more mature, girls are more responsible than boys, but that often points to this loss of childhood that girls experience early on. So there's an added responsibility, there are added expectations on girls that are not necessarily added on to boys. So boys in many ways are allowed to have the sanctity of their childhood kicked, you know. So I want to know, really, just like your own reflections, having written the book, having thought about the characters and their interactions in the way that you do, why you included or you weaved through that loss of childhood so delicately, but also so clearly in the book as well.
I think particularly to Adini's story, you know, you can't have any child being forced to get married and not instantly lose their childhood. So she never experienced childhood, so to speak. And many girls, like you said, even if they're educated, my friends and I talk about this all the time, where right from the age of 8 or 9, you know, mom's saying, come into the kitchen and join me. I mean, you can join, but if you in many society, many environments where there's a guy there and the guy is saying, playing his game, Nintendo or whatever it is in those days, it will be the girl who will drop whatever she's doing to come into the kitchen, because she's perceived to be the one who's going out there to be the home builder, the homemaker. It's automatically given to you as a girl child. And so I wanted to show that, what, you know, what's his name? Aduni's father had two boys. One was older than Aduni. Why wasn't that one who was working, why wasn't he providing for the family? So you see, it was all quite deliberate, but Aduni's father felt that, you know, Aduni's older brother was going to get his own wife and fend for his own family. So it's Aduni's role as a woman, as a girl child, because she's a commodity, to go bring in the bridal price and all that. So it's just what it is. But I'm hoping that is changing and we'll get there. And yeah, all of that. But it's what it
is. Has writing this book changed the way that you interact with your children? Just thinking about the loss of childhood that girls often experience, the added expectations, has it changed any of the ways in which you interact with your own children? I mean, you mentioned that you and your friends talk about the ways in which girls have their childhoods just yanked from them.
Yeah, I think so. But I think I've just always been the kind of mom who wants my children to be everything they want to be. Right. I don't feel that certain, like, I, you know, my mom said to me she wanted me to be a lawyer. And I was like, okay, cool. But I'm not doing that with my kids. I'm like, you know, do what you want, whatever it is. There's nothing like there's a particular role, like doctors, only guys can be doctors and all that. No, you know, I try for them to have a rounded childhood, for them to experience it, for them to be confident without being cocky or rude. You know, motherhood is hard work. And I can only try to make them to be the best of who they are. And that's what I'm trying to do every day. And it's not easy, but yeah.
So there's quite a few comments about unlearning, that there's a culture that we need to unlearn, but also how important sisterhood and that being there for each other is. Back of Spring says that they should have arrested Big Big Madam Man, her husband. Yes, I agree.
Yeah, I agree.
So Zizo says, had Aduni's father taken Born Boy to Ia's place, would he have snitched when he found her in the loo room? Also, have you considered what would have happened if Aduni had returned to Ikati?
If he had taken Bomboy, maybe the older brother, I think he might have, because the older brother doesn't have the same bond that the younger brother has with Aduni. Remember, the younger brother is like a son to Aduni, so that's why, you know, that was that show that way. I think the older one genuinely believed. I see the things that there's a lot of ignorance in this book from the characters. Many of them, Aduni's father genuinely did not think he was doing anything wrong. He genuinely thought it was the right thing to do. And every time Aduni kept on begging him, he kept on saying everything would be fine because that's what he believed. And so that's why, you know, somebody saying there's a lot of unlearning. There is a lot of unlearning to do. We need to re-educate people. And I'm not talking about education of you know, actual schooling. It's education of the mindsets, making people think differently as to how they see or perceive the girl child. So that's, I think, yes, to your question, if he had taken Bomboy, absolutely, he would have said, she's here. Take her away, not because he wanted to do anything bad, but because he believed that Aduni was going to hurt herself by running away. Mm-hmm. So they thought it was the right thing to do. I'm not sure what the second question was. I think I might have.
What would have happened if she had returned to Ikati?
I think I touched a little bit on the jungle justice, which was something that I came across, you know, a few things in my research that enraged me. And so if she had gone back, potentially she might have been a victim of that, or she might have been punished. Certainly she would have gone back to Morofu and she would have been punished. So yeah. So no, it was a good thing she didn't go back and she would not have been educated. So her dreams would not, the book would, you would not be reading the book if she went back.
Vimsy says, thank you for the interesting Nigerian facts at the beginning of each chapter. This is from a fan from Zimbabwe.
Ah, hello. Thank you.
Basically, we just spoke about the book of facts. So, you know, the book is real. You said that the book was written to reflect reality and the realities of so many of these girls. And I think that there were two ways in which you could have ended the book. We obviously don't want to say too much, but you chose an ending that potentially I think I would not have predicted, in having just sort of some of the things that happened to Aduni. Why did you choose to end the book the way that you did? Particularly considering that for so many of these girls, that's not the reality of how their stories.
I think, yeah, I did that to show that, look, it can happen. Right, we cannot continue, because when I wrote the book at first, trust me, that's not how we ended. But I felt, what's the point then of telling just this story without showing a way out, in a way? Yeah, I mean it's not my job to prescribe a way out. I'm not a doctor as such of situations, but at least I can control, this is one thing I can control. So why don't you control it a little bit to show some hope? So for those that haven't already, it ends in a hopeful note. Without saying too much, but you know, I just felt that there's hope for these girls. There's still hope. And you know, you and anyone that, you know, is living in Nigeria, anywhere in the world, and has one of these girls within their homes, there is hope. You can still do things. You're never too young to go back to school. You're never too young to fulfill your dreams. You know, the book is really about dreams as well as aspirations. And so it was important to carry that thread throughout the book and to end it on that note that, yes, there is hope. And there's hope for all of us, even in the situations where we're all locked down. There's still hope.
So I want to know, what is next for Abby? Are you planning to write? Are you writing a second novel? Would you write in a different medium? What's next for you?
I mean, writing is something that I love to do and I hope I continue to do all my life. So the answer is I'm hoping to carry on writing. Obviously, Aduni's voice is, that's her voice. It belongs to her. So I'm not going to, you know, probably write anything else in her voice. But yeah, I'm exploring potential stories. I'm drawn to stories about the woman. And I think I might be exploring something along those lines for a potential next book. Okay. We'll see.
This has been a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much, Abby. I think people have had lots of their questions answered. I think that we've had some really interesting themes around just unlearning, and it's really nice to know that, you know, there's hope, and I think that just in a time like this, it's really good to feel that there's a hopefulness, and that there is more to look forward to. So thank you so much. How do people get in contact with you? So how do they find you on social media or any sort of other platform like that?
Yeah, sure. I'm writing on Instagram. I should be more frequent in posting, but I try. So then there, @abidare_author, and I'm on Twitter as well. So please reach out. I love to hear from readers, and you know, thank you all for supporting my book and for loving it. Thank you for joining as well.
Thank you so much, everyone. This has been a great conversation. I hope that everybody finds their own louding voice. And tomorrow on the Cheeky Natives, we have the amazing Sisoke Msman. She's going to be on at 4. So I just want everybody to make a note that it's at 4 p.m. And not the usual time of 6, because she's in Australia. And yeah, super keen. We want to hear all your questions. We know you have tons of stuff that you want to ask Sisoke, who is just Black Girl Magic. So super looking forward to seeing all of you guys tomorrow at 4 p.m. And thank you everybody for joining us, and thank you for such an awesome conversation. Good night.